From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. Monarchs are in trouble. Populations of both the eastern and western butterflies have been dropping dramatically. Western monarchs have seen a 99% drop in their numbers since the 1980s. Now, a variety of factors are at play here, which include climate change, pesticides, as well as loss of their habitat to human encroachment. In 2020, the Fish and Wildlife Service said monarchs may need to be on the endangered species list, but they did hold off listing them, at least for now. So some states are working together to try and find ways to help the butterflies so they can try and head off these federal restrictions. Dr. Karen Oberhauser is a professor of entomology and is the director of the Arboretum at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she is joining us now to talk more about the monarchs. I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you, Gemma. It's great to be here.
So, Doctor, tell us, how bad is the monarch's decline?
Well, it's significant. For both the eastern and western population, we have done modeling studies that say if monarchs reach a certain level, what is the chance of extinction? And both populations have gotten to levels that make us worried about them actually going extinct. Now, extinction would only happen if we have a low year and then we get some dramatic event happening that kills 80% of the population. So whenever the population is low, it's more susceptible to these catastrophic events that occur every once in a while. So for both populations, there is a risk of extinction. I mean, both of them are hanging in there for now, but the reason that the Fish and Wildlife Service said that they might warrant protection under the Endangered Species Act is because that it's not guaranteed that they'll continue to hang in there.
So in the intro, I mentioned a few factors as to why we're seeing this decline. But talk to us about why monarchs are in trouble.
Well, probably the most important thing for both populations is habitat loss. So over the long term, habitat is being lost to human development, also to changing agricultural practices. So increased ability to apply herbicides to fields because of genetically modified crops. So an increase in the amount of herbicide use. So that has meant that some agricultural areas are no longer available to monarchs. So we have habitat loss as a big driver. Most scientists think that the vast majority of that habitat loss kind of leveled off in the mid-2000s, so kind of 2005 to 2007. We think that there isn't a lot of habitat loss since then. So now probably the most important factor that's influencing monarch numbers from year to year is climate. And climate, as we know, can vary a lot from one year to the next, but we also have long-term trends that are driven by climate change. So we know the factors that are associated with high and low numbers of monarchs, and climate change models suggest that the bad conditions will become more common in the future. But that said, there are some areas where climate change could actually help monarchs. For example, in the northern part of their range, the warming climate will be better for them because they're insects and they do better up to a certain point with warmer temperatures. Their development is faster. So it's sort of the Goldilocks theory of monarch numbers. It can't be too hot and it can't be too cold. And definitely some parts of their range are experiencing conditions that are now too hot.
So Dr. Oberhauser, who's trying to help these butterflies to make sure that they don't have to be listed as an endangered species?
So the great thing about monarchs is, actually the two great things about monarchs is, first of all, people really care about them. And people are interested in monarchs. And the second thing that's important is individual people can make a difference. So we have this perfect combination of a species that people care about and that they can actually help. So we have a lot of people creating habitat for monarchs, whether it's in their backyards or at their schools or their churches or places where they work, along roadsides. We just have a lot of people working together. And this is happening at kind of the grassroots level with individual people. It's happening at state levels with state departments of natural resources, highway departments, nonprofit organizations. So people are getting involved with monarch conservation at all different levels. And that can really make a difference, because even though the climate is changing in ways that will be less conducive to monarch health over the long term, if we have a lot of habitat available spread out, the odds are that conditions will be good in some places every year. So that's our hope, is that people keep working to help them.
So if I have this right, there are 23 states, there are energy companies as well as transportation departments working to preserve this butterfly habitat. So what exactly are they doing?
Lots of things. It varies from state to state. So in some states, there's a lot of effort on the part of state agencies to create habitat. In other states, they're working more on education and helping people understand what they can do. In some states, there's money available for people who are working on monarch conservation. That's happening at a federal level too. There are opportunities for people to apply for grants. They can apply for, if they're agricultural producers, they can apply for programs that provide them support. If they're nonprofit organizations that own land, they can apply for federal grants. So, and in some cases, state grants as well. So what's happening really varies from state to state. But I think the important thing is that the states are supporting these efforts on the parts of individuals.
And talk a little bit about what's called a butterfly corridor. These are being created along highways and power lines. So so explain what that is and the goal of it.
So the corridors can work in a couple different ways. The vast majority of monarchs in the United States every year are produced in the Corn Belt, so kind of the upper Midwest. And those monarchs, there's kind of a corridor, we call it the central flyway, that monarchs move through the central part of the United States on their way to Mexico. So focusing on those states along that central flyway will be the way to help the most monarchs. But for example, there's the eastern flyway. In some years, the eastern population is more important because weather conditions have been better there. So we have flights occurring. Habitat is important in those areas too. So generally the corridors are places where we tend to see the most monarchs. But also we can think of corridors, and when we talk about roadsides, utility rights of ways, railroad rights of ways, those are linear habitats that allow monarchs and lots of other species to move between areas where there might be larger expanses of habitat. But it's actually, if they have to fly long distances and don't have any nectar plants available, can't find any milkweed plants to lay eggs on, it's less likely that they'll find these larger habitats. So we can think of corridors on a small scale, just movement from one big habitat to another. And we can also think of corridors on a very large scale. So the whole movement of that whole migration going down to Mexico.
So are these efforts to help the monarchs working?
I think so. In some ways, it's hard to tell that, because we know that climate change is continuing. So we have these negative drivers, human development. There are still agricultural fields are being created from prairies. So we know that we're continuing to lose habitat. But over the past decade, monarch numbers really have not gone down very much. So I think what we're doing now with all of these efforts is holding our own. what we need to do is increase monarch numbers. But at this point, the efforts that people are undertaking to help monarchs are, in my opinion, helping them from going extinct. So yes, they're making a difference.
So you mentioned, the non-scientists, just regular people making a difference in helping the monarchs. So what can the average person do? And do these, we call them citizen science projects, actually really help the butterflies?
Sure. So we can start with the citizen science projects. And when I think of a citizen science project, I'm thinking of people who are actually collecting data. And we really need a lot of data to understand, first of all, what's happening to the monarch population, but second, what conditions are conducive to monarchs doing better in an area. So if we have a lot of people out collecting data about monarchs, we're going to be better informed about what we can do to help them. So I would recommend people join in projects like Journey North, where they can basically report any monarch that they see. The Monarch Larva Monitoring Project, where they can get kind of dig into the details of how monarchs are reproducing in their area. So citizen science is really important because it helps us understand monarchs. People can also, I think the second important thing they can do is create habitat. And this monarchs can use very small areas. They can create habitat in their backyard, and monarchs will probably find it. It can be on large scales as well. It can be at people's schools or places of worship or businesses. There are a lot of places that we can carve out habitat for monarchs. The third thing people can do is they can support conservation organizations. So any organization that's working to preserve habitat needs people's support. So that's important. And finally, people can spread the word. They can tell other people, because really monarch conservation needs to be sort of a grassroots effort. We need this happening everywhere. So people can share their stories with their friends and their family and their people they work with. The media can report about monarchs. So I think spreading the word is really important.
Mm-hmm. How worried are you that we'll lose the monarchs?
Well, in some ways, it depends on what side of the bed I get out in the morning. Some days I have to be honest, I'm pretty discouraged. But what really helps me not be so discouraged is to see how much people care and to see how many people care. So I really do believe my field of study is conservation biology. And in many ways, I think of conservation biology as the science of hope. I wouldn't be a conservation biologist if I didn't have hope and I didn't think that what we're doing will make a difference. So I'm very encouraged by people's passion and the degree to which they're trying to make a difference for monarchs and all of the other species that monarchs share habitat with. So, while I get discouraged because I really understand what's going on, I study it, that's what I study, then sometimes that's a bit depressing, but seeing how much people care helps.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking about this. I hope that, having the conversation makes a little bit of a difference. So thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Dr. Karen Oberhauser, Professor of Entomology and Director of the Arboretum at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about the rapid decline of monarch butterflies and how people are trying to help them.